This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Far south of Mexico, at the beginning of the drug supply chain, the demand for drugs becomes a tempting hope for farmers in Bolivia to improve their lives by planting coca. Attempts to eradicate coca crops by force are part of a U.S. drug policy that even the White House has reported has failed demonstrably in countries like Bolivia. While the White House points fingers of blame at the government, activists in Bolivia point to a 2004 agreement between farmers and the government that permits limited coca production. This cooperative arrangement has led to a decline in coca production and the planting of other crops. Catherine Ledebur is the director of the Andean Information Network in Cochabamba, Bolivia, where U.S. influence, she says, is basically non-existent.
Demand for cocaine in the United States, it's the largest cocaine-consuming country in the world, really drove farmers in Bolivia and Peru initially to expand a licit crop, a crop with traditional natural and ritual uses. And so efforts to control this crop don't work if there is no reduction in an international demand for cocaine that keeps pushing these poor farmers to plant that crop.
From the farmer's perspective, do they have an interest in this anti-drug war, anti-drug policy from the White House?
Well, farmers have an interest in planting coca, feeding their families, being able to have a small cash crop, being able to buy school supplies and shoes for their children. It became an interest or a concern for them when, beginning in the 90s, the U.S. imposed forced eradication with the police and the military, where troops came in and ripped out their only source of livelihood. This became a huge direct immediate problem. And now that the policy has changed and it's a less repressive policy and it's actually working better than the United States, in Bolivia at least, there's a lot of resentment towards the United States for the over 20 years of imposed policies that actually did more damage than they did good.
How is the Bolivian government creating policies which produce incentives for farmers to do something different than plant coca?
Well, it's interesting that President Morales is himself a coca farmer, and he rose to prominence with the struggle specifically against these U.S. policies. But what they've done in Bolivia is step back and looked at coca control not as an anti-drug measure, but really looked at the root problem, which is poverty and hunger and the need for subsistence. And they've allowed in established coca-growing areas a small plot of coca. It's about a third of a U.S. football field. And what we see for the first time, when you have a minimum wage and a guaranteed income, you can branch out to other crops, other economic initiatives. And at the same time, there's been a state vision that's very, very different, looking at providing basic services, at measuring the success of these programs on the well-being of the population, their income, their health, their access to water. This is a huge shift, and it really has shown over the past 10 years some pretty dramatic results.
Has the U.S. shown any sign that it will accept a policy that is anything less than eradication?
Absolutely not. It's important to note that the U.S. at this point in time plays no role financially, no role strategically in coca or development or drug control efforts in Bolivia. And what we see with these yearly certifications, these unilateral report cards that the U.S. gives, is that they're not interested in accepting strategic advances that are carried out, really that fly in the face of the policy they've imposed in Andean countries for decades, and actually are beginning to show some very concrete documented progress. It's a big ideological problem for the U.S., and it really shows how the U.S. is out of step with the international community and this need to reevaluate how we deal with international drug control.
Catherine Ledebur is the director of the Andean Information Network. She spoke to us from Cochabamba, Bolivia. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.